Well, hello, Fort Worth. How are you on a Sunday morning?
Pretty good.
I want to welcome you to Simmons Sporting Goods All Things Hunting Podcast. It's pretty good.
That was really good.
Welcome to the Simmons Sporting Goods All Things Hunting Podcast, brought to you by Browning Firearms, the best there is, Realtree Outdoors, Swarovski Optic, Browning Ammo, and Banded Waders. Here's your hosts, Caleb Wallace, Cole Barthel, and Kyle Bearfield.
Wicked Blend from Browning, the ultimate in waterfowl ammunition, featuring the Wicked Wad system. Aerodynamically stabilized for greater downrange energy and extra knockdown power. Loaded with precision bismuth and plated steel shot that delivers high energy retention with consistent tight patterns for cleaner kills and easy retrieves. Wicked Blend from Browning, the best there is.
Welcome back to the Simmons Sporting Goods All Things Hunting Podcast. See, our environment's a little different here. We're normally at the store, but today we're at the NBS show. And if you're not familiar with the NBS show, it's a buying group show. It's where Simmons comes and meets a lot of their vendors and places their orders, you know, for the year. Rev, he went to the ATA show a couple weeks ago. We'll get into a little bit about how that was later, but at this show, this is where you're actually writing most of your orders. And how's it been going? And one question most people ask me all the time and stuff when you come to these shows is, how do you know what you want to order? Like, how much, you know?
Well, I mean, a lot of preparation goes into, you know, just the attendance of the show. So we've been working for 3 or 4 weeks looking at last year's sales, scouring through reports. A lot of our salespeople have already sent us new product catalogs. We're talking with them, meeting with vendors. But this is where you actually get to put your hands on all the new stuff, get to look at the cool stuff, and then sit down and write your orders. We try to get by and look at everything, maybe pick up something new, see what's on the market. And this is where that happens. We've been here since Thursday. And got one more day. So. Okay.
Yeah. Well, I'm working the booth also for Mojo Outdoors, and got to meet Doug. This is Doug Roberts. Do an official introduction, but worked from Conquest since, and he was across the booth from us. And a lot of times at these shows, you're sitting around looking, waiting for people like Rev to walk down the aisle, but somehow they always avoid our aisle. Seems like they're on every aisle except our booth's aisle, but. During that time, a lot of downtime, so we got to talking about deer hunting. And all three of us very passionate about deer hunting. But Doug has an extreme knowledge, you know, based on your business and your livelihood about deer and certain things. And so we got to talking about CWD and EHD in particular. And, you know, a lot of people, including myself, Rev, we don't know a lot about those diseases. I know enough to be dangerous and probably say the wrong thing. And so, you know, what we're going to do today in this podcast, we want to dive into specifically CWD, but EHD and stuff as well, inform, you know, the viewers about kind of what it is, what they might hear from people that are in the know like you that they may not hear from the DNR. You know, there's two different directions that CWD specifically has as far as remedies and what it is, and we want to just educate. So, you know, the floor is yours to introduce yourself, talk about your background, and we're just gonna dive into it. You know, so listen, if you're interested in CWD and EHD and how it has killed your deer or not killed your deer, what it's gonna do for the future of deer hunting, this will be a podcast for you to listen to.
This would be a good one. Yeah, my name's Doug Roberts. Of course, my wife and I own Conquest Sense. We also own Conquest Deer Farm. We've been raising whitetails now for 32 years. Wow. And through that process, we figured out, of course, how to collect the scents and smells that we sell to you guys and you guys sell to the hunters. But what's very interesting is being in the deer farm, you said it exactly right. There's two different distinct avenues You have the DNR direction, which is like with CWD, they're trying to slow the spread. They've never said we're trying to eliminate or stop CWD because their job literally as biologists and managers of that deer herd, they're not experts at how do we fix or stop a disease. That's not their job. That's not what they do. But when you go to the deer farming industry, a lot of us are looked at as agricultural. It's a farming practice. Now that takes in USDA, that takes in the Department of Ag, and that's where they specialize. They specialize in eliminating or stopping diseases. And so when hunters look at this, they're only kind of hearing this one side.
Right.
And with CWD, it's been around for 40 years, and all of the, I'll say, scare tactics, the things that they thought would happen, haven't happened.
Right.
It hasn't wiped out any deer herd anywhere. It hasn't transferred over to humans. And so hunters, I think for the most part, are going, what's the big deal? You know, right. It may kill a few deer. But in reality, the DNR agencies, when it pops up, they're actually killing more deer than the disease itself.
The disease itself, right. Explain what CWD is, in your opinion, and how it's spread and that, you know, and everything.
Well, we're learning stuff all of the time. So chronic wasting disease is where you have prions in the deer system that actually misfold, and then they get up into the brain and they actually create holes in the brain until those holes become so big that the deer just loses its mind. It'll stop eating, it'll start drooling, it loses the fear of people, it loses body weight, and then it finally just drops over dead.
Right.
Now, that situation, very few people have ever seen in more of a controlled situation. What the deer farming industry has been able to do is we've been able to start studying not only the disease, but we've looked and said, okay, what's similar to it? Well, scrapies in sheep was very similar. How did they eliminate scrapies in sheep? Well, they looked at the genetics of the sheep, and they said there's some resistant animals that just don't get scrapies. And when they have offspring, their offspring don't get scrapies. So what's in their genome system that is different than one that's very susceptible? So we took Dr. Seabury and did the same thing. We said, can you run the markers on the white-tailed deer and elk to tell us what markers have resistance? And Dr. Haley did the same thing. So what we've been able to do is literally start breeding for resistance to CWD. So even if we have an infected environment, these animals just cannot pick that up where these very susceptible animals can. And we're eliminating the susceptible. Therefore, we're literally feeling we can breed CWD right out of the deer farming industry.
Right. But that's in a controlled environment, right?
Exactly, a very controlled environment. So we're now looking and going, how can we take this information and move it out into the wild deer herd? First thing we got to do is we got to get the DNR agencies to look and go, it's a possibility. That's a tough one right there. That's just the truth. Mm-hmm. But we now know, like in Michigan, we've got the DNR agency that they're starting to test some of the deer in the state when the hunters harvest them. And we're going to start finding pockets of susceptibility that we're going to want to eliminate. And then we're going to find pockets of resistance that we want to let naturally multiply. Okay. And over time, we can change the entire deer herd structure by managing it that way.
That makes sense.
And we really believe that's one of the good ways that we can change this.
When you talk about the environment, how they pick up the disease, explain that a little bit for somebody that doesn't understand how it can be spread or how a deer can get it.
It's evolved a little bit over time. So we know that these prions can live in the soil for many, many years in almost any type of environment. We know it takes over 3,000 degrees temperature for so many minutes to even kill it off. What it does is it actually creates like a coating over itself and protects itself. It's a very hard disease to kill off.
Right.
But what we're also finding is that it's traveling, it seems to travel the waterways. and it's in the water systems where we find more concentrations. And that would make sense, is because they're urinating there, they're pooping there, they're drinking there, and so you're getting that complete transmission through the system. And so if you can start concentrating on the waterways and keeping those areas fresh or cleaned or moving them as a hunter, the chance of it being spread is slowed down greatly.
Yeah. The initial fear of CWD, from what I can remember, was it's mad cow disease in deer.
Right.
And has that been proven or studied? Like, I mean, you said earlier, it's never jumped to humans.
Right.
But is that fear why DNR is going through the big deal, or is now is it because they think they're going to lose the deer herd?
Well, originally it was losing the deer herd, and yet it's spongiform encephalopathy. It's kind of a hard word to say. In mad cow disease, CWD, scrapies are all in that big category, okay? Right. Mad cow disease is a totally different form than scrapies. Interestingly, USDA's infectious disease side of there has just finished a study, and what they've literally done when they've looked at CWD and they went back and looked at scrapies, the markers within that disease are almost identical. And what they really have decided on is scrapies has literally just jumped species.
From sheep to deer.
From sheep
right.
to deer.
Because think of where it started. It started out west, where the sheepers, these cattle, these sheep right. farms, just let them graze That's free right. range. Not only so is it in the soil, but they're drinking out of the same water sources. So when you're drinking out of the water sources, it makes sense that it could just easily transfer over. But if that is true, then there's no threat to humans. And we also know it's not going to wipe out any deer herds. Here becomes the fear. Now all of a sudden, these millions of dollars that are being spent through the DNR agencies get pulled away. So what happens to their budgets? People, it all comes down to money.
Money. That's,
it's,
I mean,
it's called,
look
it's called
at the money and you'll find out.
Politics.
Right.
Exactly.
Sure.
So we get frustrated at times because it's like, look at the true science. And the science, I think, is saying we don't really have something we have to worry about like we thought we did 20 years ago, 30 years ago.
Right. Right. Do you think that what DNR is recommending, you know, I've heard of, and I don't know if this is true or if this is rumor, but they're hiring people to come in and just kill every deer they see in a certain area where one has been tested positive.
Right.
What's your opinion on that?
Don't do it.
Yeah.
I mean, look at Wisconsin. They were the first one that really did it. They went in and they were going to eliminate every living deer in that 1-2 county area, and they spent years trying to do it. First of all, they did not succeed.
Did not accomplish.
Not even close. Because what happens is as soon as you create a vacuum of openness, everything from the outside goes in.
Goes to, right.
And as fast as they were shooting them, they just kept running coming. In. And secondly, it didn't change the infection rate one bit. And so they literally, I'll give this applaud to the DNR of Wisconsin. They've been telling all the other states, don't do what we tried to do. It did not work.
Right.
And yet some agencies just go, nope, that's the way we're going to do it. That's the way we're going to handle it. Michigan's kind of a little bit different. They're looking and going, okay, even in our farming industry, if you have it, let's start testing everything in that area. Let's test all the animals you harvest or you kill or cull out. But let's keep you in business so we can market that. And the DNR isn't quite doing that, but they're not going in and wiping everything out. They may increase, let's increase the doe cull a little bit. Get the age of the entire group in that area down a little lower. I don't know in Michigan if they can get any lower, but we got a young deer.
You got rifle season for that.
Huh? Yeah, exactly.
Well, you know, there was several cases that were confirmed near where we are.
Mm-hmm.
And so some of the measures that they took were to stop hunters from feeding because they thought that these were congregation areas and so where deer were coming in and feeding, then there was a greater chance for this to be transmitted between positive deer and, you know, deer that didn't have it. I mean, what's your thoughts on that?
There's two thought processes on that, and I can't say which one is right or wrong. I know I have my opinion, I'll tell it, but If you congregate deer in an area and you know you have an infection there, whether it's a water hole or a feed source, you do increase the chance of spreading that to more deer. I mean, it's just the truth. But at the same time, there's another side that people look at and go, if all of us as hunters are putting these little bait piles out or little water sources out, and we keep the deer all spread out, so you only maybe have four or five coming to yours, you only four or five, and they're not all coming to mine, that's a whole nother way of keeping the deer spread out so they don't congregate. Okay. Therefore, we're not multiplying and spreading the disease either.
So if you remove all the feed, then there's limited food sources and every deer goes to that.
Exactly. I mean, especially in the winter.
Yeah, sure.
Think about that.
Well, yeah, there's
everybody comes together. Well, now you're congregating. If everyone was able to put those little feed stations out, you keep all the deer spread out from each other. So there's been two theories. And personally, from the farm standpoint and how we manage our deer, I agree with the second one. Keep those deer spread out. Plus, they stay healthier. The healthier you can keep a deer, the less likely it gets sick.
Yeah. And where me and Cole hunt, you don't know Cole, he works for Realtree and has been my business partner in all things hunting for about 10 or 15 years, my best friend. But he's got a place in Delhi near the river. And he has supplemental fed these deer as much as anyone in the country. I mean, I'd be scared to know the feed bill on this farm. And Madison Parrish this year decided that it's like what Rev talked about, no more feeding of the deer because they found a CWD close by. And we were killing deer in the past, bucks that weighed 275 pounds and does that weighed 180 pounds, 170 pounds. And now this year, the biggest buck we've killed weighed 220, and the biggest doe we killed weighed about 115 pounds. And he's got, there's so many deer in this area of the world. Like you talk about with no feed, all the deer being congregated, there's a cotton field that's been picked, but it grows, it comes up with a natural, and I wish I knew the plant, but a little natural green plant that comes up late season. And right now, right before dark, you can walk out in that 50-acre cotton field, and there's 150 deer out in that field.
Right.
And you can see the browse line, you know, in the WRP part. So the deer they're starving to death,
right?
Basically. And so I know they're, like you said, probably not. They're probably weakened some immune system, you know, because of that. Leaves them more susceptible to diseases. But
no, you're absolutely right. We always, in the farming industry, say you got to fill in the gaps. And as long as you keep all the gaps of vitamins and minerals, nutrients, protein levels, energy levels filled, that deer really doesn't have the ability to get sick because it has such a strong immune system. Plus the body weight, you know, when a buck goes through into the rut and he wears that down, the faster he can gain that weight back and going into the spring to start growing antler, the stronger he and the healthier is, he's going to fight things off much, much better.
See, I think this makes sense because just from what I understand, I think the cases that we have seen are more public land as opposed to private land.
Right.
And that would make sense because they don't have the people that are feeding protein. They don't have the supplements there. In the public
right. No, it's total correlation. The other thing that hunters don't understand what they do sometimes is they really can damage their own deer herd is when they just put attractants or some feed out during deer season.
Only for a short amount of
time. That short period of time. What they don't understand is any time a deer's digestive system gets something new in it, it takes 25 to 28 days for it to build the microorganisms in that system to digest and take in the nutrients from it. Now, that's basically a month. So if you only do this for a month or two while you're hunting, you've now completely changed that deer system over to what you're putting in there. You now pull it away. Now it's got to take two of the hardest months of the year to switch its system back to what's left. If there's things left, most of them will starve to death because they can't do the transfer.
That's right.
And hunters don't understand that process. That's why when you see spring coming in, things grow in over a month's period of time. It's that 25 to 28 days. As fall comes in, it's a month's period. And so hunters have to start understanding that type of of what's going on in the deer farming industry has been able to study and learn that over all these years. So another one that's really unique is humic acid. Now, you'll hear a lot of people that'll say, scientists say, you know, it has nothing to do with it. But we've been doing humic acid in our feed formulas for a number of years. And what we really know it does is it balances the pH in the deer system. We all have alkaline and pH levels that go up and down, definitely in different things of what nutrients do we have, what are the times of the year. But if we can keep that balanced, it's almost impossible for a prion to misfold. And that's what CWD is. So mm-hmm. if they have balanced pHs mm-hmm. all the time. So that's another thing that is available to hunters to put into supplements. And it's really just mined naturally out of the ground.
Really?
Yeah. It's just nothing more than dirt, peat. But it, for some reason, it has that pH level that balances, and it allows the deer system, the you know, liver, the kidneys, all of those things to function properly and filter. And now the heavy metals don't get locked up in their system. Prions cannot misfold. So that's a whole nother avenue we've been looking at that is totally different than the genetic side.
Right.
But our industry is looking at both of those. And there are feed supplements out there that hunters can purchase that have humic acid in it if they want to try it.
Okay.
So when I read a little bit on the humic acid, and it affects the deer. It doesn't affect the prion. So like you can't like put it on the ground and make it go away.
Nope.
It's just
right
that deer.
Right. What it's simply doing is when they ingest that, it naturally balances the pH in their system and it mm-hmm. keeps it balanced. Therefore, everything seems to work better, which builds their immune system, gives you a healthier animal. Like we're doing, you know, humans do probiotics. Well, right. Guess what? The farming industry has been on probiotics for the last 50, 60 years. And now all of a sudden we figured out, hey, it's even good for people.
Yeah.
Well, it's just as good for deer.
Right.
So I am. So, our boss owns Simmons Sporting Goods. He's in the cattle industry, big cattle herd. And so I worked on the ranch before I ever came inside and did the sporting goods stuff. But a lot of the things that I'm seeing, and just like at ATA, stop and talk to some booths that have nutrients and they're selling, you know, protein blocks and all this stuff. And they're talking about these things that we've been doing in the cattle industry for years, garlic and, you know, a lot of this stuff, flies and, you know, and even they're talking about, you know, introducing worm or dewormer into deer herds, you know, through vitamins or, you know, blocks and stuff like that. And, you know, it makes sense. I mean, a lot of it makes sense. And I was like, you know, why hadn't we done this before?
We're all asking that question. The farming industry, truthfully, has had it figured out for a long time. Yeah. And it's just taken us a long – I don't think the hunting industry, the hunters in this industry have been ready for herd management up until now. The hunters that I'm seeing now and that I talk with are starving for information. They're starving for education. They're starving for the new things because now they're willing to spend the money to really make their deer herd where they're hunting healthy and maximize antler growth potential.
Yeah,
I mean, you can't grow a 200-inch whitetail if the genetics in that deer is only 150-inch, but you can definitely get 150-inch rather than that 130.
Sure.
And hunters are willing to spend that money because it does, you know, farming, it costs money.
It costs money, sure.
But it's a wonderful transfer.
I don't know where, and you would think with so much information or the availability of information today, why these things aren't being like what you're talking about right here. I mean, this stuff, like to me, I'm like, my mind's just whirling thinking about this stuff. I'm like, why isn't somebody else talking about this? Why aren't we having these conversations? Why aren't, you know, this information, you know, readily available to hunters? And I don't know who would be responsible for that, but I
think it's a little bit, you know, like in your industry, you make a living off of the deer.
Right.
And farmers and farming, that's their livelihood. The deer hunting is recreation.
Right.
And so it's a little bit, you know, it's not as important, but now.
But it's big money, though.
It's big money now.
It goes back to what we said a while ago. Yep. Money is, I mean, that's.
I've said years ago, whoever really figures out a true a true healthy year-round feeding program formula, which we have, but to be able to get it to market, that's the hard part, is how do you get it to market, and then how do you get the hunters to understand it's the year-round program?
Yeah.
That's what's going to make the difference.
You give somebody an instructions like, on your farm, you do this now, this later, this part of the year and all that, and then they can see the results. I believe you. I think that people would gravitate.
I think there's an opportunity there for somebody, you know.
Yeah. There is. You know, like March and August are what we call the transition months, from winter into spring and summer, and then from summer into fall and winter. So, you know, the other thing that we've done, and it's kind of unique, is we've looked at how much protein level can a deer system take in at one time, literally digest into their system. Now, they can eat 30% protein, whatever, but what goes in? You know, in all the studies over all the years, with our nutritionists, we found it's 19.4%.
That's all they're going to consume. I mean,
that's
they can
what their body can take in. The rest goes out the rear end. Exactly. They're going to poop it out, urinate it out. So if you buy 30% protein, you know this. That's pretty expensive.
It is. Costs a lot of money.
A lot more than 20%. So, but again, from a marketing standpoint, a lot of manufacturers go, but I make more money in that 30%.
Well, and I think from a hunter standpoint, though, I mean, if we could get those guys to even, like, 15% is better than nothing. So
big time.
Even if you're buying a protein pellet or whatever it is, and you're supplementing year-round, you are way more ahead than if you're only throwing that however much it is you spend. I mean, like, last year, feed was astronomical. I mean, I don't know. I bet you I spent $2,000 to $3,000, you know. Just on rice, bran, and corn.
I'll trade your bills.
I know you'd trade any day, but, you know, I mean, just, and that's all we heard. I mean, everybody I talked to is like, man, you know, rice bran's $13 a 50, and, you know, corn's $10, and everybody's like going crazy.
Our corn went up from pallet was $260 two years ago, and it's over $400, you know, this past year, and we still fed it. That's one thing about deer hunters is they're going to buy it. They're going to do it.
They're going to spend the money.
I understand it. If you work hard every day and you look forward to going hunting on the weekend, you're going to make sure you have fun.
Yeah. The other thing, too, is that, you know, our industry has looked at is if you can put stuff in pellet form, deer are like us. Deer are like kids. And when I always do seminars, I always say deer are exactly like us as humans. What we go through in 70 years, they go through in 7. So for every year of their life, it's 10 years of a human's life. And so you can not only understand their personalities and kind of age them according to that, but also how they're going to act as they go through that. But they also, when they look at feed, if they get to pick and choose, they're going to go pick out the things they like. They may not get everything that they need. If you put it in a pelleted form, they don't have an option.
That's right.
And so a lot of our industry has gone to a pelleted form. The other thing is keeping it off the ground. I mean, you've got coccidia, you've got giardia, you've got so many bacteria in the ground that once it gets into a deer system that can multiply and work on it, especially fawns. In the calving industry, I mean, if calves get coccidia or giardia, they're dead. You know, they just drop over. So, you know, we can medicate through our water and feed, but in the wild, try to keep your feed off the ground. It just keeps it much cleaner and healthier for the animals.
You talk about medicating the deer in the feed. Currently, and you can dive into what y'all have done on the genetic side of CWD as well a little bit, is there any way to a vaccine or a medication that available yet for anything for CWD and we're going to get into after a break. We're going to get into EHD as well and explain the difference. But for that,
too. Really with CWD, you've got just the markers and you got humic acid that our industry is working on. Mm-hmm. And both of them seem to have very positive results. Now I can give you one study that actually was on a podcast or a radio show. There's a farm up in Wisconsin, the Fleece Farm. It's been there for many, many years. We know the last 3 years has had 60% incidence of CWD on all the animals harvested out of that hunting ranch. Right. And these are older bucks. These are of all ages. 60% is high.
That's big.
And we know the infection is all through the soil, the water system. what they did is they went in and they wiped out all the GEGs with their highly susceptible to CWD.
Mm-hmm. When you say GEG for somebody that's listening, that's you were talking genetics now.
Right. This markers. Is genetic markers. So you in deer you have GEG, you can have SS, you can have KK, you can have HH, and you can have combination of GS, KS, you can have any of those combinations, but we know GEG is the most susceptible. So if they're in an environment that's infected, within 6 months, they're guaranteed gonna they're going to have it. Right. Absolutely. And you'll be able to test them for it. So what they did is they went and wiped out all of those. And so everything in there had some level of resistance. This year when they actually harvested 49 of their bucks out of there and tested them, they had zero infection rate.
Zero. So they went from 60?
60 to zero.
In now, 1 year?
Just by
1 year. Just by literally eliminating the GGs. So if you look at it from a breeding aspect, if I just don't breed any GGs, I've increased my resistance rate dramatically. And so we've been doing that on our farm for the last 6-7 years.
Right.
And now you got Seaberry's numbers, which take it down to, I can tell you that deer is more resistant than that one by a hundredth of a mark. Because he's doing like 50,000 markers now compared to 6 or 7.
Right, right.
So it's really taken off fast.
But how does this translate over into the natural herd?
Well, again, if we can start testing some of those harvests in the States and go find out where are those susceptible and resistant pockets.
Start DNA testing those deer with the CWD.
Absolutely. And then the DNR just has to start managing the deer herds with, doe permits and not doe permits.
One of the things they did, so just north of us in southern Arkansas, they have a 3-point rule. So basically for bucks, it has to have at least 3 on one side. And so in these counties that were affected last year by the CWD, basically they said, okay, we're going to take away all the restrictions and we're not going to restrict you so you can shoot anything.
Yeah.
And so I guess by that, they're trying to increase the harvest.
There was a study done many years ago out west that they studied all of the bucks that were harvested out there. And what they found was that the older bucks had a higher percentage of CWD infection rate than the younger bucks. We look at that and go, it's pretty flawed. Because when we all go out west hunting, we go out west hunting for trophies. And we're only going to shoot a mature buck or a trophy buck. And if we don't, we're going to eat the tag. And so they did this study out there, but they only got the older group of deer. They never really got the young stuff to see, is that true? And so the DNR agencies, that's the only study that I know has ever been done. So they're using that philosophy. We got to get younger deer, younger bucks. We got to get all the older bucks killed off, and then we won't spread the disease. But it was based on that one study. So
wow. I think the next Civil War would start around Delhi, Louisiana, if they went into Cole Barthel's farm and said, we got to kill all the older bucks. Yeah. We got only little bucks left. Oh,
it would be bad.
Yes. Yeah, again, when you look at the deer farming industry and you look at even like the Fleece Ranch, they've got 4, 5, 6-year-old bucks there, and they're now pulling them out, and they don't have the disease. So there's a lot of promise. It's getting the DNR agencies to look at the science and go, let's try it.
But again, it goes back to the money. So if they feel like they're going to lose budgeted funds, then, I mean, and this just makes me think about some other stuff we do, politics in our,
It's all intertwined, and it's very frustrating, but it's the reality of it because right now we're talking about the number one most emotional whitetail or animal on the planet.
Mm-hmm.
Tell me one person you've ever met that doesn't love a whitetail. I don't care if you're 2 years old or if you're 102. You may not like hunting, but they all love the whitetail deer.
Right.
Everyone loves seeing it. So it's so emotionally charged, you're always going to fight that.
That's right. Mm. That's very, very interesting information, and makes me want to dig in more. And I know, same thing for Reb. But we're going to take a little break, and when we come back, we're going to talk about another whitetail disease called EHD that has affected me personally on places I hunt more than CWD.
Accuracy and innovation live on in Browning X-Bolt rifles. The Expo Pro family features ultra-stable carbon fiber stocks, the protection of Cerakote finishes, fluted barrels and bolts, and the innovative Recoil Hog muzzle brake. The Recoil Hog reduces felt recoil by as much as 77%, while minimizing muzzle climb and dust signature to keep your downrange target in sight. Put performance in your crosshairs and squeeze the trigger on X-Bolt accuracy today.
Welcome back to Sima Sporting Goods All Things Hunting Podcast. We've been digging into deer diseases and whitetail. We got special guest Doug Roberts from Conquest Sense. He's about one of the most knowledgeable deer men that I've ever met, so I appreciate you being on the podcast and your insight to CWD. I'm a deer nerd, and Rev is too. And so
I'll make three.
Yeah, so we like talking about this, but we've discussed CWD, and I hope everybody listening, you've got, you know, more good information to help you understand that better, because before we sat at this table,
right,
I didn't know a whole lot about it, and I feel a lot better, you know, listening and talking, and I know there's a lot more to be learned. But another disease, and a lot of people confuse the two, CWD and EHD, you know. And so if you want to, Rev, you can talk a little bit about it too, but Doug, we'll get into kind of the differences. And I know, like, personally, and Rev hunts a lot in Illinois. I used to hunt in Illinois, and I had a lease in Calhoun County, Illinois. And it's probably 7 or 8 years ago, it was like a mass extinction in September on our place, where just deer were dead everywhere. Like, the smell on our lease of dead animals was unbelievable. And we lost, I don't know a figure, but if I had to put a figure on it, we lost 80% of our deer herd. Yeah. And our lease was never the same after that for a number standpoint. But the silver lining in that was the ones that did survive, I guess it took some pressure off the habitat. We killed our biggest bucks we ever killed 3 years after that.
Mm-hmm.
But now it's gotten to where it hits us on that lease every couple of years, and so we could never really establish the age structure that we wanted back, and we ended up giving it up because the landowners we were leasing from, they still wanted to charge the same price as we were paying when it was prime hunting, and we just couldn't afford it anymore for what we were killing.
Right.
And so for people that don't know, if you could dive into EHD and what it is a little bit.
Okay. EHD is actually epizootic hemorrhagic disease. And so it's very different than CWD. CWD is a prion misfold, where this is actually an infection spread by gnats. The gnats, there's swarms of them, actually, that will go at times. They love to be around moist, cooler water areas. That is why, you know, lots of times hunters will say, well, it seems like more of the bucks get killed off than the does. And that's true, because when the hot part of the year, those bucks go into the cooler areas, they get into the moist areas, these gnats will get in there, they'll bite them. And what it basically does is an infection that goes into their system and starts to explode their blood vessels through the system. It's a horrific disease because they overheat, and you'll always basically find them in the water or by water, because they're literally trying to cool themselves down as all of their veins and arteries are exploding within their system. I mean, you think about that, it's just, it's a horrible thing. And a lot of deer people have seen it, they'll actually go in and drown themselves because they want to stay cool. trying to cool and get away from the gnats. The other thing, a hunter will always be able to tell if it's EHD, because there is nothing that will eat it.
I got you.
You know,
so it'll decay, not even cows, buzzards.
A vulture, a coyote, nothing will ever touch that animal. And it's something to do, we're thinking it's something to do with the way all of the blood vessels and everything rupture. And it goes back to kind of like the smell you're talking about. It's a different type of death smell. It's horrific. But these gnats basically were always in the south. And as temperatures, fall's coming later, spring's coming later, the time frames of seasons are changing. They're consistent, but they're changing. While the wind currents are coming more south, we've had more south winds up there in Michigan on the farm than we've had in a number of years. Well, those gnats get into those wind currents and they start coming north, and they're coming further and further north now. And what we're also finding is that the way the topography of the ground is that wind currents follow channels of valleys and or over through little openings of the mountains. And those are the areas that are consistently over and over every couple of years getting hit so hard.
Right.
Well, that's the natural wind current that they get up in, and then all of a sudden the wind dies and they drop, and deer in those areas, they're going to get wiped out. The good news is this. Our industry, there's three strains of EHD. Two of the three strains, we have created a vaccine. Okay. So we literally can go and vaccinate our deer. We got to give them a shot, and then 2 weeks later, we give them a booster shot, and we can literally create an immunity to those two strains. They may get sick, but then that immunity also gets passed on to the offspring. And we're real close to getting that third strain figured out with a vaccine. The problem when you want to transfer it to hunters in the wild, we haven't figured out how do we get that vaccine into a feed formula.
Right.
If we ever do that, that is going to change.
That'll change. Yeah.
And whoever has that formula, going to have
going to get wealthy.
Me and Kyle
are going. That's when we leave this meeting right now. That's what we're going to figure out.
Well, there's a few people working on that one. But you know, it's so there's again, if you want to say there's some positive things coming, we just don't know how to get it into for the wild deer herd right now.
And this is just ignorance because of that. So EHD and blue tongue, is that?
They're very similar.
Okay.
Yeah, they're very similar. Some people say EHD and blue tongue. You know, up where I'm at, we've never had a case of blue tongue ever. Now, we know EHD has kind of hit, you know, the southern, western side of Michigan a couple times. But, again, are we nervous about it now? Yeah. Because
couple years ago we hunt Southern Illinois anyway, and I remember one year it just seemed like everywhere you went there was dead deer, and they were almost always, like you're talking about, they were either going to be ponds, some type of water, either in the water, near the water, and found several carcasses. And it wouldn't be just one here or there; it'd be multiples at at one place, and. I don't know. We talked to DNR. We talked to the people up there, and they were like, no, you know, that doesn't sound right or whatever, you know what I mean? So I don't know.
But you think about it. I mean, all of the bucks, you know, they all group up all summer long while they're growing antlers. And so if that batch of gnats gets down into that cool area and that whole group's there, it's wiping that group out. It just they're all gone.
Right.
And that's really the damage that they can do. It's...
Well, like in a controlled environment where y'all are, you know, raising deer, breeding deer. Mm-hmm. I mean, you know, in cattle, some of the stuff we do, fly control, you know, to keep gnats and flies and stuff away.
We do the same thing. Yeah, we've got mesh netting that now is impregnated, because lots of times those swarms will be only so many feet off the ground. As soon as it hits that netting, it kills them all off. We've got fogging systems now. That some of these, you know, I got a 100-acre farm. I can't fog a 100-acre farm. I mean, just economically, I can't do it. But most of the deer farms are smaller, maybe 5 to 10 acres. Some are 20 acres. They do have the ability to fog that whole area or net the perimeter. Now they've got to come up over and drop in, and it just normally doesn't happen that way.
I got you.
Yeah. What is a deer's resistance to it? It can't, you know, does it kill 100% of them that get it, or do they? Some of them survive it.
There's a few that do survive it, and again, it's because they do have some natural immunity. We don't understand exactly what it is, but they do get stronger from it. We do know if a deer gets infected, gets sick, and does not die from it, they get stronger. If they were to get bit again, they wouldn't get near as sick. And we do know that it passes on to the offspring to some extent. How many generations down, we don't know.
Oh, yeah. Right.
Because even with us, we're still boostering, you know, every few years. It's just a, you know, nature. It's it's a bad way of culling, but nature has a way of culling
the
system.
I think, you know, when you were talking about the CWD, I was thinking, you know, and you were talking about in uncontrolled environments and stronger and weaker. I mean, that's God's way. I mean, that's the way it's always been. That's the way it'll always be. Right. And I think, you know, God's going to take care of that.
Every species on the planet, including us as human beings,
Exactly. Nature
has this way of the strong survive, the weak die out. The difference with us is we think we're so smart that we can outsmart it all. And, yeah, we might increase the lifespan a little bit.
Sure.
It's still going to happen.
That's right.
Yeah.
But overall, EHD, you know, it's originated in the South, but over the years, we don't see it as much in Louisiana that we know of like we do up north. And that's because it's more recently just been moved up there by these winds and stuff, and those deer are not resistant to it.
Wasn't that a big deal up in Montana a couple years ago?
Big deal.
Devastating.
Yeah. In Wyoming.
Wyoming.
And that's the thing. I mean, the wind currents, and you look at the weather and talk to weather people, the wind currents over time are starting to change, and we're starting to get more of that going down. And
you're not suggesting global warming, are you?
No, I am not suggesting global warming. Just ask North Dakota. Ask my farmhand this morning. Nine below zero.
Oh, my gosh.
Yeah, he says, I'll go do waters later. And it's like, yeah, maybe just leave him alone.
Yeah.
You know, it's cold. You know, and again, that's what people don't understand is that cold type of weather really does a lot of good things. You know, we find out who's weak in our deer herd. It kills off all the stuff in the ground and the soil.
Well, that's what I was going to ask because, you know, we always, as farmers, ranchers, you know, we always thought that more harsh winters, would kill all the mosquitoes and, you know, all the fly, all the stuff that were really bad. But, you know, we would kind of think, well, yeah, we get a hard winter this year, you know, spring's going to be better, but... Man, it seemed like, you know, really didn't matter. I mean, you could have a mild winter, you could have a hard winter. Yeah. Still going to have, where we are in the spring, man, the gnats get so bad.
Okay.
It is unreal. Mr. Jeff's got a place over in Mississippi with Grace Heifers over there. And, man, you go over there and literally they will get in your eyes and your nose. I mean, ears, you kind of, it is, if you don't wear glasses and, I mean, sometimes we have to put.
Head nets.
We don't wear the head nets, but I mean, we use some stuff that you actually put on, you know, on your face, to keep them away, man. But you're talking about it is miserable. And it's the same way, you know, on these animals. I remember a couple years ago, we went early season on a whitetail hunt, and, I was miserable. And I know, a doe and, her offspring came and literally they would lay down. And just twitching, I mean, because of the, you know, the bugs. I mean, they could not, and basically they would lay down for 1 or 2 minutes, get up and move, and wouldn't move very far, do the same thing, lay down again, and they just couldn't. We see it in cattle. When cattle are like that, they get stressed, they don't drink, they don't eat. You know, it causes creates a lot of problems.
You really wonder how they don't go insane.
I would literally go insane.
Yeah.
Because it drives me crazy, you know, when we're working in that environment.
Well, you know, you brought up earlier about the garlic. And we do put garlic in our feed because that comes out of the pores, and they might fly around our deer, but they don't land on them.
Right.
And it's a big difference because now they're not having to twitch and use that energy up.
Yeah, we started using a product, vitamin and blocks and stuff, and they're using garlic and they're using like cayenne.
Okay, cayenne pepper.
Yeah. And that, and I know that sounds kind of crazy, but like you're talking about, you get in the pores and, I mean, it does something. I mean, that.
It does. The problem that we have is, you know, we have part of our deer farm is what we collect all of our scents from.
Oh,
you don't want exactly. the garlic well, and cayenne and that.
We didn't think about it. And
so really.
Oh, we fed everybody and we started collecting Evercomb and also like.
You smell that?
We did. And we had to throw it all away. Because you could literally smell the garlic,
in the scent as we
process it. And we're like, oh, so I had
hey,
to.
I'm gonna give you a plug, man. That Evercomb, that's good stuff.
We have been so blessed that, you know, we just everything that we've done has happened kind of by happenstance. And when that came along, you know, just. Literally, our worker just had it all over him, and I said, well, you stink like a herd of deer, and I just went, oh, my gosh.
Yeah.
What's the perfect scent? It's just all the deer smells together. It just makes them feel
herd
comfortable.
Scent. I mean, it's I started using it a couple years ago, and it's, I mean, that's my go-to.
How do you use it on a hunt?
So usually whenever I get close to, we hunt a lot of potent land walking in, and what I like to do is whenever I get within, you know, 400 or 500 yards of where I'm going to hunt, climb, or even on the ground, I like the stick, and I just rub it on the inside of my boots and slip in. And then once I get usually in a tree, I'm going to turn around and put it on the tree behind me. Yep. And it is – I've seen it. I've had deer that they'll walk the trail in that I came in, and, I mean, they just – I mean –
It's a weird.
It is the weirdest thing I've ever experienced in my life. I mean, and I've tried to use a lot of different stuff, and man, a buddy of mine turned me on to it, and he was like, "Hey," and of course, whenever I came into the store, and I was like, "Oh yeah, that's the stuff." And so I mean, we have a ton of people come in, and they want to know what do you use and whatever, and I'm like, "Well, look, you know, I mean, I can tell you from experience this right here, it works."
Yeah, we've had more store owners, managers go, is Evercomb's the number one requested scent by hunters. They walk in, and if we don't have it, they will not buy anything else other than that. And and it's kind of neat. We just never would have.
And it's one of those things that, I mean, and we have a lot of people that ask, you know, for our opinion on stuff. And I'm like, hey, look, just try it. If it doesn't work, come back up. You know, I'll give you money back on it. I mean, no problem. But I have that much confidence in it that I know. Yeah.
You're not giving your money back.
No. Yeah. They come back, and that's what they say. They're like, man, that stuff works.
I think, you know, just paying attention to deer and all that, and we feed a lot and stuff, is that deer use those type of scent. Like a deer, that's how he finds his food source, not by listening and seeing. It's by smelling where other deer go, following that trail. You know, so I think they're accustomed to doing that.
And feeling safe. They don't have to see them. Their nose, if their nose knows it's smelling
real deer, if they're in a good area.
Right.
Let me tell you, and this is something I think I shared this with Kyle, or it may have been Cole, but had something happen to me this year. A buck was chasing a doe, and she had came by a couple different times, but about the third time he chased her by, it was like whenever she caught that scent, that ever come, she came and got right under my tree. And I've never had that happen before. And the only thing I could really attribute it to was maybe she felt like that hurt scent. She felt safe there. And literally, she would, whenever he would posture and come this way, she kept me and my tree in between her and this buck. And I was like, that is the, and it was like she kept looking up at me, but knowing I was, should have been danger.
Dude, you're going to help me out?
Exactly.
Smelling it.
I think what you get is, you know, does, when they're being chased, have one of two options. They either can get into another group of deer, and then the buck's got to figure out which one is it again. You know, and they go chase somebody else off and give her a break. And I think that's what you had right there, is she thought, hey, there's deer here, so let him go chase somebody else. Or the other option they've got is they got to run through really thick stuff that the buck just has to slow down to work himself through, and it gives them a chance to catch their breath again.
Right.
So yeah, it's been a blessing. It's been a lot of fun to hear everyone tell us how they use it, and there's really not a wrong way to use it.
How do you use it?
I'll put it on my boots, my pant legs. You know, before we had the bombs, I even put it on my arm. So if I'm bumping anything going in, then it just leaves deer smells. But I do the same thing when I get up in there. First thing I do is put it right above my head, because wherever my breath is going, that scent's going right along with it, and I want that to mirror. But the thing that we found is a lot of them will come from downwind. You know, those deer are going to come from downwind, and hunters just go, I don't get it. My scent's going, yeah, but all that Evercomb smell. So they want to come up and find out who's up here. Well, now there's your opportunity. Right. I try things too that I'll blow areas up, because I'm trying to push
the limit.
Right? I'm pushing the limit all the time.
I say it all the time. We're not deer hunters. We're scientists in a tree, because everything is an experiment, from letting this buck go to see what he comes back next year, to testing different scents to feeds. Yeah. We're always out there experimenting.
Yeah. My most fun thing is trying to take the right genetics and can I create that perfect. You know, I've got that. We all have that perfect buck in our mind that we either want to harvest. For me, it's either harvest or grow, and really it's grow. And I've come very close, but I want that perfect 7x7 typical 30, 32 inches wide, wow. 33-inch beams, 15-inch tines. And I've been there, except he split his brow tines, and everyone's looking at me like, you're worried about – I said that. I'm so upset about split brow tines. You know, and it's a 240-inch whitetail.
Man.
But you've come close. But, again, if you don't work for that kind of perfection in what you do, even in our scent products, we never cared about being the biggest. We simply want the very best premium scent products, and you guys just – are able to get it out there, so it's been a blessing.
Do you use the Evercalm during the rut too, with kind of more of your rut type scents?
Evercalm is all the time, year round.
Right.
And when I say year round, like right now, we've got cameras out. We're just monitoring stuff. We've got Evercalm out in front, one way or the other, whether it's hanging in our stink sticks, whether we wipe it out, you know, and it freezes at times right now.
Right.
But
no, I never thought about that. That's a great idea.
Yeah. That's how we do for our feed, is that we want the deer to associate the taste and smell all the time, so that when they walk by, they smell it. Oh, that's good. I didn't even think about that with scents, but
so
you want the same thing.
So you can do that with cameras, like
Absolutely.
Man.
Our stink sticks, which are so nice because it's the wax formula, so if it's not freezing out, they'll last about a week long, and then you just take top off, dump it up, jump new one in. But you're getting perfect pictures all year long of everything you have there. Mm-hmm. And if all of a sudden you start to see a problem or an issue, you can adjust to it or whatever you have to do. But we always have it out in front of our trail
cameras.
That's
good information right there.
Turkey hunting, you know, where we hunt, that's right where the whitetails are.
Mm-hmm.
Man, I'm wiping Evercalm out, because if I got all the deer around me, and those turkeys are coming in, they're not thinking anything about that. So people don't think about a deer scent turkey hunting. Where we're at, we have to hunt both species right in the same area.
Yeah.
So
yeah.
Yeah. If I got deer blowing, turkeys are staying over there out of range. So.
Yeah. Well, I don't know. Makes sense. What I've seen in the booth, you know, different applications for your scents. Go through a little of those for us.
Well, you got the liquid formula, which is the old standby. Then we've got the wax formula, and we're the first ones that came out with that, and everyone thought it was a joke until they figured out it was really easy to apply and the evaporation process. And then we went to the aerosols. And then a couple of years ago, we came out with the scent fire unit, which actually is a vaping unit where you put the cartridge in. And what's neat about that is you can use it by remote. So if you can put that unit out 40 yards out in front of you, and you can set it off and put as much scent into the air as you want. Plus, it's a really good wind detector. And one remote will work multiple units. So you can have different scents out there, an Evercalm, a VS1, maybe a running buck, depending on what time of the season.
Right.
And you can be putting that scent out when you feel you want it going into the bedding area. And that's one of the things I like about it, is you can set that up where it will carry down into the bedding areas and pull those deer out a little bit early. If you can gain 5 minutes on those deer stepping out, that's the chance of shooting that big buck.
Right.
And then the new ones this year are the thermopads. And that's just a paper wafer that you can hang out any time of the season in front of trail cams again. Right. They last about a week in that form. But when you get into cold, freezing temperatures, simply slide them into a butane heated scent dispensing device.
Thermocell.
There you go.
Yeah.
And now for the first time, the industry, this is the biggest thing in all of the years we've been doing this. I keep saying, how do we get scent into the air when it's freezing out?
It's below freezing, right.
We finally figured it out. So it's really
when when I saw that, I was like, this is game changer right here.
Yeah, yeah. And we're hoping to come out with our own unit. That's our goal. Because,
but, I mean, still, and like you said, you can use it standalone. You don't have to have the,
exactly.
The heated the butane. Did.
Well, and it can be used also when it's not cold out, and it even emits more scent out in warm weather. So
I can't wait. I can't wait to try it.
I got guys in Texas right now that's what they'll put in the blind with them, and he says, man, it's just as ever calm like crazy. I'm like, how perfect is that? I didn't even think about it.
Yeah.
So
absolutely.
Kind of cool. So those are the new ways that we're dispensing the scent
that's
out.
Right.
Yeah.
I like it. That's cool stuff. I've never use scents as much as I should, probably. But and you tell me if I'm wrong with this. I always, when it gets kind of the rut time, I gravitate toward a rutting buck, and I use like a, you know, that buck scent more than the doe scents. But what would be your opinion on how would you use them? Use the two. Give somebody some information that has no clue about when or what to use.
Well,
use these scents.
Honestly, what you're doing is correct. because when you're hunting in areas where the deer herd is very well balanced and you have mature bucks in the area, mm-hmm. and you have multiple mature bucks, the rutting buck, the competition scent actually becomes more effective on those bucks than a doe that's in heat, because they have to eliminate all competition in that area. Right. So they become much more aggressive. So a combination of Evercalm, put a buck decoy out, put Evercalm on the underbelly, and then you put that rutting buck on the tarsal glands down on the hind legs and stuff and really get it on there where strong. I'm telling you what, those mature bucks, they're coming.
They're coming.
They are absolutely coming. Now, on the other side, once the rut's done, I actually like to go to a doe decoy and then use the VS1, because all of those bucks that are there are still looking to breed, mm-hmm. but all the does are bred.
Bred.
You're the only one out.
That's right.
I mean, you are it.
They're looking for that.
Exactly.
That one doe that's left.
You're it right there.
Right.
Now, a lot of guys will set it right out in the middle of an open field, and that's a doe that's in heat is not going to normally stand in the middle of an open field. They're going to stand right on the edge of the wood line. They might be just inside the wood line. So you've got to understand, where are you going to put that? But then you just Evercalm on the belly, VS1 on the back end. Put the scents and the smells where they should go on the animal. A lot of people forget that, and it's mm-hmm. like, no, they're all going to go downwind, and they know where it should be.
That's right.
So
that's
put it where it should be. Yeah.
I like it. Well, thank you very much for
Oh, my yes, goodness. Sir. Thank you, guys. This is awesome.
I've enjoyed it. Enjoyed
Absolutely.
It greatly. Like you said before we started, anytime we can talk about deer, you know, we yeah. enjoy it. So
you, know, you can get me on a roll on this stuff.
Well, for, you know, for people around the Simmons Sporting Goods area, you can definitely come in the store and buy the Conquest Scent products, the Evercalm. Rev, you might need to stock up on some more after this podcast.
Write another order.
Yeah, but,
well, we appreciate what you do for us.
Absolutely.
I mean, it's a wonderful fit
I mean,
for
it's,
both.
It sells itself. It's one of those main products. If you can just get people to try it, they're going to come back and get more. And they have to have it.
Yeah. We're happy with our customers, that's for sure. So,
and then follow us on social media. Follow Conquest Sense. If you got any more disease questions, CWD, EHD. If you didn't quite understand something we said, send us a message. We may have to send it over to Doug to get his expert opinion on it, but we'll answer it best we can. So, appreciate y'all being here and enjoyed it greatly.
Yes, sir.
Sounds good. Thank you.
What is it that distinguishes the best? A wanting to defy reason, disrupt industry, and captivate the imagination. To be better, you should look further, dream bigger, aspire by Bandit. Superior.